Good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and you gators and grannies to this little bit confusing start to a big edition. Well, Sunday afternoon edition of the Big Puzzle, and I'm coming to you live from my kitchen here in northern British Columbia, broadcasting through the facilities of People's Internet Radio and being simulcast on chickenweekradio.com. Thanks for joining the show today, and thanks for Stephen for producing my shows. I am joined today by Alex Newman and Mark Friesman, and we're going to get into the conversation right away here. But before we start talking, I just wanted to share a couple thoughts about what I've been seeing going on down in Australia and the living hell they're going through right now. I don't know if you folks are following the events in South Wales and the condition of the fires down there, but they're really, really having a bad Christmas. So just my thoughts out to those guys today. Welcome to the show, Alex and Mark. Pleasure to have you guys on.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, a little bit of a rough start there, but, you know, I'm not a professional radio guy. and those little burps happen once in a while. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
Alex Newman, folks, is a writer for the New American Magazine and is an award-winning journalist. And I listened to your talk with David Knight there. That was just done recently. And I also listened to you talk to Sheila Gunn Reid on The Rebel. Alex, and I've shared those videos around. A lot of people are starting to pay attention to what's being said about the climate hypocrisy and the weapon they're using against us. I know you were in Spain for that conference, but you weren't able to get to Nairobi, correct?
No, I was not in Nairobi, but I have been going to these climate clown shows for the last, 10 years or so, and I did just get back from Madrid at the COP25, so...
Right, and that was quite a charade, eh? Nothing apparently was really done, just a lot of talking. And, of course, did you get Greta Thunberg's signature?
We did run into Greta Thunberg a few times. Actually, my team member was able to talk to Greta's father, and really, really bizarre. And we also ran into Kian Bexty, and he's with that Rebel News, and he is actually the only journalist on the planet who has ever asked her some serious questions. He tracked her down in Alberta and asked about, he started off with a friendly interview, even asked for a selfie to kind of butter her up, and then started asking real questions like, hey, where's all the money coming for this? You know, how do you travel around the world, and who's paying for all this, and how do you stay in these fancy, nice hotels, and why are you driving a $200,000 car? Where's all the money for this coming from? And that's when they got really defensive, and actually they threatened to call the police on him. And the irony of all this was that he and the other journalist from The Rebel there, who's actually become a friend of mine, Sheila Gunn Reid, both of them were banned from the UN summit, apparently at the request of your regime there, Mr. Trudeau, and a company did not want any real Canadian journalists at the UN summit, and I think the UN was only more than happy to oblige. So the irony that the only journalist who's ever asked Greta some real questions is not allowed in the climate summit to see Greta was really, really interesting. So.
Yeah, they also reported that I saw that video of Greta's car. It was full of plastic, and she's in there preaching about the evils of plastic. They're the biggest hypocrites in the world, right. But we see that across the board with these people.
Climate contraband, that's right. And it was full of beans, too. You know, they keep whining about methane also. Oh, my goodness, cows and flatulence. And there they are stuffing their face with beans. I mean, I wonder what they think is going to come out the other end. Crazy.
I'm going to let Mark put a question to you, but my biggest question to right now is, when did carbon become an enemy of the planet? When did carbon become something evil? And I've studied basic science, and this attack on carbon, it doesn't take a rocket scientist really to figure out what's going on. The fact that we are now seeing very, very low levels of carbons as far as their accumulation of parts per million. I've read 4 or 5 reports on it, and I've read as low as 380 to 450 parts per million. An optimal growing condition for carbon concentration in the atmosphere is around 1,000 to 2,000 parts per million, yet we're attacking carbon. But the insanity of it all just drives me nuts. Mark, what do you think?
It really has been incredible to see this. Because, you know, I'm old enough, but I still remember when I was in school, we were taught that, CO2 is this wonderful gas, and human beings and animals exhale it, and then the plants kind of breathe it in. You know, they use it for photosynthesis to turn the sun's energy into, plant matter and so on. And so that it's just this beautiful cycle of life. And yet the real turning point, you know, after the fall of the Soviet Union, they needed kind of a common enemy to rally everyone around as a pretext to keep the huge government and the massive taxes and the United Nations and all these multilateral institutions in place. And so the Club of Rome got together, and then, you know, that group included people like the Soviet dictator Mikhail Gorbachev, included Al Gore, of course. You know, the Rockefellers were always key players in this. And what they figured out was, hey, you know, a really good enemy to unite us would be, what if we just say humans are the enemy? What if we just say humans are bad for the planet? And, you know, we'll tell them that CO2 is actually pollution and it's going to hurt the environment. And hey, that'll give us a pretext to do all kinds of things. And I think that's where they really got the idea started. But it took many years from the time that report came out until the time that, you know, they could get that to filter down. They had to start funding pseudoscience at the universities, find people willing to, you know, jump on this bandwagon. They had to find news outlets that would uncritically parrot this garbage. They had to get governments on board. You know, once you have the U.S. taxpayer funding all this stuff, it's not that hard to get the show moving. You bribe the third world dictators to sign on the dotted line. But I think really that Club of Rome report, it was called The First Global Revolution, was probably the turning point at which they identified CO2, again, the gas of life, as the enemy of humanity. And Barry, you were right on the money in terms of, you know, plant growth. Plants are designed to operate, and I'm quoting from Dr. William Happer here, Princeton physics professor who's been climate advisor for several years now. He finally resigned from the National Security Council after realizing that he wasn't making as much headway as he had hoped. But he explained in a speech that he gave at a climate summit where we both spoke that plants are designed to exist in an atmosphere with 4 to 5 times as much CO2 as we have right now. That's why, you know, farmers pump it into their greenhouses. It makes the plants grow much better. And if you look at most plants, you're right. Their optimal CO2, atmospheric CO2 levels is about 4 to 5 times what we have right now. And, of course, CO2 is not going to cause any kind of climate catastrophe. That's what propaganda. The relationship is actually opposite, right? As the Earth gets a little warmer, CO2 starts coming out of the oceans, and so CO2 concentrations in the atmosphere increase. And that would be a wonderful, wonderful thing for the planet.
It would, and it just shows you the power of mind control and indoctrination in the mainstream in our education system to have us turning against the one building block that supports life on the planet and demonizing it, and it drives me nuts. Mark, what do you think about all this?
Well, so,
and welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Barry. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with Alex and share the mic with him. It's the similar situation, of course, as, you know, Dr. Patrick Moore, who is, you know, the founder of Greenpeace, who, of course, left Greenpeace. And, I mean, he says the same thing, and he's trying to get the word out and get people to understand, listen, CO2 is a fundamental building block of all life on Earth. We can use a lot more of it. It's not creating climate change. And so, you know, we see this narrative. And ultimately, and Alex, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I truly believe that the whole CO2 climate change hysteria narrative is ultimately to raise funds from all of the, especially Western nations, because that's where most of the wealth is. And it's ultimately a redistribution of wealth scheme meant to suck as much money from the West as possible to fund their socialist agenda, the UN Sustainable Development Agenda. I mean, that's ultimately the goal, right? That's global governance. That's global socialism / communism, ultimately. And so I really think that the whole CO2 hysteria is the linchpin that we need to bring down. And I think it's the easiest one because, I mean, one of the things I find hard, and I'm sure Alex will echo this, is getting the masses to understand how big, how enormous this agenda is. I mean, it's taken them 40 years to put it in place. It's going to take a number of years to unravel all of this. And that's why I like to focus on CO2 and the carbon tax and this whole hysteria, because it gives us an opportunity to attack the linchpin that connects all of this together, because without the funding, their agenda really starts to fizzle, I hope.
Alex?
Yeah, I think several nails were just smashed on the head right there. It is absolutely about global wealth redistribution. And you know, you don't even have to speculate about it. Secretary General Antonio Guterres, the big cheese at the United Nations, actually stood up during the COP25, and he said that we need $100 billion per year for, they call it their Green Climate Fund, I call it the Green Climate Slush Fund, and of course they expect that the Americans will pay most of that, and you know, obviously with Trump in office right now, we're not working over all the money that they're demanding, but you know, your government has been more than happy to fork over the money. Also, the Northern Europeans, the Swedes, the Norwegians, the Danes, the Germans, even the French, and the Southern Europeans have pitched in. But it is an enormous transfer of wealth scheme. But it's not, you know, the way that the socialists and communists typically claim, you know, it's going to be from the rich to the poor and the middle class. Quite the opposite, which is what always happens under these kinds of regimes, right? They end up taking the money from the poor and the middle class and siphoning it off to the elites. And that's exactly what we're seeing in this case, too. You have the poor and the middle class in Western nations, in developed nations, in Japan and Australia and Canada, the United States and Europe, subsidizing the elites of the third world, the third world kleptocrats, the dictators and their cronies, and, of course, the UN bureaucrats who like to live high on the hog. And I think that is one of the fundamental parts to being able to understand what's really going on here. It is a massive looting operation to loot the taxpayers of the developed world and to keep everybody else in poverty. You know, yes, they want to steal our money. And part of the policy agenda in terms of taking our money is actually to bribe third world dictatorships to keep their people in poverty. And that's a big part of what goes on at these climate summits. They say, you know, how much do we need to pay you to make sure you guys won't build any power plants so that your poor and starving people who are still cooking their dinner, in their mud hut over cow dung, don't get to have electricity. And that's the objective here. And that's why so many American scientists, people like Dr. Roy Spencer at the University of Alabama at Huntsville, who used to be a senior climatologist for NASA, he calls these people climate Nazis. If their ideas end up successfully implemented, millions and millions of people will die as a direct consequence. And, there's nothing funny about that. It's really serious. And it does take a lot of money to bribe third world dictators to be willing to do that. Yeah, they like to have a lot of money, too. And, if their people would develop, that would allow them to tax them more and siphon more away and put it in their Swiss bank accounts and, you know, hire more limousines and private jets. If they're going to keep their people in poverty, they expect something in return. And that money's going to come, of course, from the Green Climate Slush Fund. But I think it goes beyond also just redistributing our wealth. And the words communism and socialism were mentioned. I think those are really important to understand. And if you look, all the leading characters in this whole operation, almost to a man, are either communists or socialists or super capitalists. Now, you have fingerprints of Goldman Sachs and the Rockefellers, and all these guys are all over this. And they don't even bother to hide it anymore. And I think the end goal, my friend Patrick Wood here in the United States has done a lot of pioneering work on kind of giving us a good idea of what this global system that they want is going to look like. And he's referred to it as a technocracy. And I think it's a really useful term for us to understand. Because, yes, you know, the communists and the socialists and the fascists and all these other guys have lined up behind this idea. But it won't be, you know, traditional Marxism-Leninism per se. The goal really is to have this technocratic form of government where the elites will rule. They'll have kind of a layer of technocrats, of scientists and experts to do, you know, the managing. Very much kind of like a ranch operates, right? You have cattle experts to manage the cattle and, you know, what kind of health care do the cattle need? And do we need to move them to a new pad? No, really. I mean, they think of us as cattle. And they think they're going to manage us, and they are now putting the pieces in place now to bring this about. And it has a lot of similarities to communism and socialism. It's global slavery, but rather than having, you know, equality be the sole justification, a big part of the justification, of course, will be environmentalism, right, saving us from alleged man-made climate change, and, of course, efficiency. They say, well, you know, why do we need to have all this wasteful free market capitalism where people get to consume whatever they feel like? Let's just have, the central planners, the scientists and the experts who know how these things work, decide what ought to be produced and in what amounts and all the rest of it. And I think that really, you know, reading Patrick Wood's books really gives you a lot of insight into where this is going. It's kind of like the China model on a global level. You know, officially, China is, yes, still run by the Communist Party, and in many respects, it's still a brutal, mass-murdering communist dictatorship, but it's more than that now. Right? They've introduced some semblance of market forces, and they've also created this technocratic administration that manages the public very much like a ranch would manage its livestock. And I think that's what we have to look forward to here if these people get their way. And it's a big if right now. You know, I think that there's a lot going on that suggests that the agenda is in some serious trouble. You've got multiple very important governments that have rejected this agenda right now. But, it's going to be a struggle, and we're going to be fighting this for a long time. I don't think this fight's going to be over in our lifetime, certainly. So.
Well, the more they censor us on our ability to communicate, the tougher it is to get this information out. And we see an all-out attack on freedom of speech, both in the United States and Canada and around the world right now. So we do have a monumental task in front of us. Mark?
Yeah, that's it's definitely all part of the equation. When you look at freedom of speech, you look at the whole transgender, you look at gun confiscation and their plan for disarmament. All of these things are connected. And all you have to do is go through the 17 goals, the Sustainable Development Agenda, and then all the 169 targets that are associated to the goals. And it's basically Marx's manifesto on steroids, right? It's like this global socialist movement. And yes, so we have a colossal task ahead of us because we've been, especially in the Western world, we've been asleep. I think people have this sense of taking everything for granted. We've been spoiled for a long time. And all of a sudden, with this agenda that's been in the works for 40 years, 40 plus years, is now coming into effect, people don't believe it. And it's almost too much for them to absorb. So I actually have a question for Alex. And like one of the struggles I have, Alex, in Canada, getting the word out, is getting people to understand how enormous this is without them disbelieving, because it's so overwhelming. So I like what you have done and what some of the folks like you in the States that have termed it the deep state, because it gives them something tangible to hang on to, you know, even from a marketing standpoint, at least they can understand, you know, deep state. Whereas in Canada, we don't have, you know, that marketable phrase or that marketable tag. It's just, it's globalism, or it's, you know, the UN SDA, which is really hard for the sleeping mainstream Canadians to understand. So what would you suggest?
Yeah, it's been a fascinating process to see this in the United States, because it's only a very recent phenomenon that the great majority of the American public now recognizes that we have this thing that people are calling the deep state. Before Donald Trump became president, it really wasn't something that was kind of on the front burner in the mainstream of public conversation or the public consciousness. But then what happened with the election of Donald Trump, and even before, you know, the run-up to the election, people started sensing that something wasn't right. Like, suddenly every organ of power, the media, the bureaucracy, the intelligence agencies, the government, the politicians, the Congress, the Republican establishment, the Democrat establishment, yes. Like everybody, the mega banks, all were united against Donald Trump. And people started saying, wait a minute, that's kind of strange, right? And now it's at the point that the Monmouth University did a poll a couple years ago, and they found that 74% of Americans now believe in the existence of a deep state, defined as an unelected group of individuals who secretly work to control and manipulate national government policy. And it's a very good definition for what we're dealing with. So I think what it really took was something like the candidacy of Donald Trump to get people to kind of see that. Because Donald Trump was saying a lot of the things that people were thinking, you know, talking about globalism and why do we have open borders and why are we, you know, building up communist China? Why are we dismantling our manufacturing? Why are we surrendering more and more sovereignty to the United Nations? Why are we playing along with global warming hoax? And suddenly it started making sense to people. So the deep state, again, it's kind of a new term. And I think America is a little bit unique. And you know, the Canadians share a lot of this with us, but America is unique in that the American people historically have always been very suspicious of power. Our ancestors who came here primarily came fleeing from persecution, from what, you know, whether that be the kings and queens or the Catholic Church or, you know, whatever it was back in Europe, they came here fleeing overbearing power. So the American people have always had kind of an innate suspicion of government, of people telling us what to do and how to manage our lives. And we also have this incredible heritage of liberty enshrined in our founding documents that extends really all the way back to the Pilgrims coming over here. And I think that makes us unique to an extent.
Yep.
But this is a global phenomenon that's happening now. You know, I think Brazil is another really good example. The election of Jair Bolsonaro, I think, also showed people, very similar to what we saw in the United States with the election of Donald Trump, that there is this kind of secretive group of individuals who are nefariously working against our best interests and trying to build this global system. So I think the Internet has been a big part of it. The elections most recently have been a big part of it. And at some point, you know, I think the Canadians will catch on, too. We're going to get to a point where, as a very wise man once said, as we get closer to this, the conspirators are going to really have to do the equivalent of running through the streets naked, you know, hollering all the way to the finish line. And we're almost getting to that point. And that's the point at which we will have the best opportunity to stop it. It's also the point at which we'll be very, very close to the other side having its objectives met. But it'll be the time when everybody kind of sees what's going on, and that's when we really sink or swim. And so I hope, you know, Canadians will follow the example of Americans. Start waking up. I was really disappointed with your last election up there, as you guys might imagine. But, yeah, I know there's a lot of smart Canadians, and you share a big border with us. Hopefully some of that will, you know, cross the border through osmosis at least. And, you know, Canadians and Americans can work together to fight these people.
Well, that's why I'm so happy that Barry's having this discussion with you, because it is part of the equation. And you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, Americans have that innate sense of distrust of government. I mean, they're you know, your whole country was built on rebelling against the establishment. And so you have that. And whereas Canadians, they don't have that same innate sense that Americans have. So a couple of that, culturally, we're always a few years behind Europe. We're a few years behind the States. For whatever reason, we're kind of sleepy. But once we wake up, you know, we'll be on board. But so it's the task at hand for us is to wake up and educate the mainstream. And I use a lot of your work to share it, you know, through YouTube and social media and other ways. So it's appreciated. But one thing I don't see enough of, and this is just my perception and just my view, is I guess it's probably because Americans are sort of, I mean, they are the big boy on the block, right? They're our enormously large cousin to the South. But I don't hear enough attention being made on or toward UN sustainable development agenda. So, I mean, I get the whole deep state thing, and I think it's great, and it leads directly to that globalist agenda. But I'm just wondering if Americans in general understand, especially the Trump-supporting Americans, if they understand what that is, that UN sustainable development agenda, and how enormous that agenda is. Or is it more they're looking inward and protecting themselves from their own deep state, their own internal agenda?
Good question.
Yeah, it's a really good question. And, you know, it came through loud and clear at the COP25, too. The media, you know, and this makes America different from most other places, the media in the United States has been almost completely silent about what happened at COP25 and about the sustainable development agenda. They almost don't mention it. And, you know, that's really different from, like, Scandinavia or from Europe or even from Latin America, where they're regularly talking about these things and openly incorporating it into policy. I mean, the same thing is happening here, but the media doesn't talk about it. And I think the reason why is actually not all that difficult to understand. The American people, even, you know, liberals who might vote for Democrats, who might vote for Obama, if they saw some of this stuff, if they heard some of this stuff, they would absolutely freak out in a way that, you know, goes way beyond anything that you might see, like, in Germany or France or Spain. You know, those people, you know, they hear these things and they've been, you know, more brainwashed than Americans. They don't have this kind of same history, this same idea underpinning their nation and their people. And so, you know, it doesn't make them as suspicious. So I think the trick for the establishment in the United States has been just don't wake up the sleeping giant, right? Don't talk about these things. You know, talk about the Kardashians. Talk about, you know, football. Talk about things like that. Don't talk about the sustainable development goals. And don't talk about these climate conferences, because if the sleeping giant wakes, you know, they're tiptoeing around the United States. If the sleeping giant wakes up, it will crush this whole charade faster than you can say, wake up. And so they're very, very careful about not talking about it. You know, the only time they do talk about it is when there's a significant, you know, setback for the agenda, for example, and then they trot out all their fake experts to kind of ridicule people. Like, you know, some of our states have started banning Agenda 21. And, you know, the media didn't want to talk about this at all. So basically, the only people who were putting out information on this were conservatives. So, you know, the state of Alabama, to give you an example, in 2012, they passed a law banning any implementation of Agenda 21 in their state, whether that be by the state agencies or by local government, you know, the subdivisions of the state. They said that it is hereby illegal to implement this stuff. Anything having to do with the UN Sustainable Development Agenda is banned in our state. And that's when some of the media finally, you know, came out and said, oh, look, you know, a bunch of kooks, a bunch of conspiracy theorists, that they're passing laws against, like, a voluntary UN agreement. This is so unscary, and blah, blah, blah. It's really the only time you ever hear them talk about it. And, again, I think the reason why is clear. They know that if the American people knew these things were going on, if they had any understanding of what was in the Sustainable Development Goals, you know, the UN Agenda 2030, even the liberals would join forces. You know, Rosa Corey is a good example, the leader of Democrats against Agenda 21. You know, even Democrats, even sensible Democrats, recognize the value of private property rights and the value of, you know, at least a relative, you know, they may be in favor of a welfare state, but they don't want to become Cuba, for crying out loud. Exactly. So, you know, that's why they don't talk about these things here, which is, again, distinct from other countries.
Well, that's exactly the same thing that we're seeing in Canada. The media absolutely does not touch Sustainable Development Agenda. They don't promote it. When Hollywood came out with Angry Birds and it was all over, you know, the marketing for that movie, Sustainable Development Act Now, I mean, nobody even knew in Canada what they're talking about. They have absolutely no idea because the media doesn't teach anybody or inform anybody of it, because if everybody, even liberals in Canada, understood the consequence to this agenda and the consequence to our freedoms and our liberty and our culture, they would absolutely rebel. It would be tomorrow, it would be over, right? And so we're seeing exactly the same thing. But then when the message is coming from people like me on a small scale, you know, it's really hard to bust through. And you know, I'm trying to get other, of course, other folks are doing it across Canada, but it's all small scale. It's not mass media. So it's a tough hill to climb. So we'll keep plugging away.
Yeah, it is a tough hill to climb, Mark, but I am seeing more and more people getting involved in social media, wanting to have their voices heard. Lots of people have come up in the last 3 or 4 months that are actually starting to draw a lot of attention to their stations. They're just common people like you and me that really see what's going on and are absolutely appalled at the future and are really starting to speak out. So I do see a change there. I see a lot of people coming in.
Barry, I
also noticed that even in conversations I'm having now in coffee shops, people are actually starting to talk about United Nations. People that I, you know, a couple of the old guys that I sit with, when I spark these conversations, you know, they don't really want to talk about it. But then when you spark the conversation, they'll come out with comments that absolutely are 100% factual. But I hear this in society now all the time that people are scared to say anything. It's absolutely incredible that people are getting to a point where they're actually fearful of speaking their opinion on things. Of course, we know why that is happening. But I have noticed a change lately. Myself.
Yeah, and I think a big benefit to the narrative and changing the narrative and getting it out there, of course, was the last election cycle. And Alex may not be aware or doesn't know too much about our system here, but of course we had the People's Party, which gave us a platform, you know, on a national stage to denounce globalism and to denounce the Sustainable Development Agenda. And I think, and I watched it as the year progressed from the time we created the party till the time the election came around, that there are, you know, exponentially more people talking about globalism and the UN and its impact. So I know it's working. I know it's happening. It's just, you know, it's so frustrating being in a position to actually understand some of these things and, you know, continually having to repeat from a base level to, you know, inform people. It's taxing.
All we have to do is hijack the CBC for about 3 days and put it out on the air and the country will be awoke. But, you know, that's not going to happen. Alex?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of wisdom there. I think social media has been very important to the awakening we've seen, not just in the U.S., but around the world. But I think increasingly, you know, that avenue is going to be cut off to us as you know, a really valuable tool for getting the information out. I think there's a lot of value in the way that, you know, freedom-minded people did it 20, 30 years ago with, you know, leafleting and pamphleting. And that's one of the reasons why we keep the print issue of the New American magazine around. It's, you know, so many of the magazines in the United States now are going all digital and they're ending their, you know, print publications. Even some of the newspapers are starting to do that. But we've decided not to do that. We're going to keep the print magazine in circulation because it's one of the ways that people can use to bypass not just the mainstream media, but also increasingly the social media and censors. You know, Facebook and Twitter and all these have really started cracking down. Just yesterday I saw they took down an hour-long interview with Yuri Bezmenov, the Soviet KGB defector who warned Americans back in the 80s about cultural subversion and how the Marxists were infiltrating, you know, the Soviet agents were infiltrating the educational system and the media and all that with the aim of demoralizing. So increasingly, you know, these big social media companies, and I mean YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Google, Microsoft, Apple, all these big companies are trying to shut down all free speech if it, you know, interferes with the agenda. And this is even happening, you know, on the liberal side of the spectrum. You know, that's Tulsi Gabbard, for example, one of our Democratic Congress people, who's not really pro-establishment, has been speaking out about the illegal wars and all this kind of stuff. Even they're being censored. And so, you know, it's not just a partisan thing. But I think one of the key things to keep in mind is that, you know, the Internet was an extremely valuable tool, and it still is to this day. You know, we still have ways to get information out that way. But there may come a time, and it may come sooner than we'd like to imagine, where that will not really be a valuable tool anymore. And at that point, we just need to go back to what used to work. Flyers, leaflets, pamphlets, you know, phone calls, you know, emails, of course, will probably still be open to it. But getting information out the old-fashioned way. And, of course, there is no substitute for organization. You know, there have to be organizations. Nobody's going to be able to, you know, ride in on a white horse and, you know, knock out the establishment and then restore freedom. It's going to take an organized movement to be able to do this. And, of course, there's the spiritual components. You know, as long as people want to be wicked, as long as people want to be immoral, it's going to be very, very difficult, if not impossible, to restore true liberty. And so, you know, the churches have a really big role to play, too. And in America, most of them have kind of been sleeping now for decades. I'm sure the same, in fact, I know the same is true in Canada. Not all of them, of course. You know, it's not fair to generalize, but the churches, of course, are going to have to play a really active role in getting us back to our senses if we hope to restore civilization, restore freedom. And you know, our history is completely intertwined with the churches. It was the churches that really sparked the patriots in the United States to resist tyranny. And it was like that in the 1700s. And, you know, if it's going to happen again, it's going to have to come, at least in part, from the pulpits.
Yeah, there's definitely a moral decay happening in America that blows my mind, but I see it going on all around the world. And I believe the two are hand in hand, of course. I see the attack on the family, no matter what we look at in our society now. It seems like the family unit is under attack. We look at the health of our children. It is under massive attack. It seems to be like an orchestrated multi-pronged attack on the family unit. And to me, the family unit is the strength of our society. It's what our society was founded on. And if you take that family unit apart in our society, I believe it's inevitable that society will fall apart. And that's where I see us going right now.
No question about
the agendas. Well, the agendas I see going on with the transgender agendas being ramped up in our school. Our children are so confused. They're not allowed to be kids anymore. And then, of course, we have Greta Thunberg running around telling them they're all going to be dead in 10 years if they don't get their parents to stop driving their cars. I mean, Hitler turned the children against the population, and we see the exact same thing happening now, man. A carbon copy.
Yeah, and that came through really clear at the COP25, too. You know, Al Gore stood up, he used to be our vice president, claimed to be the inventor of the Internet, although, of course, he was not. Total lunatic, we call him the climate guru. And he stood up on the stage, and he's like, yeah, you know, I know everybody's a little bit demoralized. You know, Trump, the climate denier, is president of the United States, and the Brazilians don't want to play along, and the Australians, and boo. But guess what? We have all your children marching in the streets for climate justice. My evil laugh. And we are going to be unstoppable. And that really is a key part of their agenda, is to sideline parents, you know, get parents out of the picture, and have government really indoctrinate and weaponize the children against the parents, against the, you know, the older generations, against the free political institutions that have been handed down to us through the generations. We're seeing that now. We've seen every tyrant do that. You know, Hitler obviously is probably the premier example. You know, brainwash the kids and go to school, and then brainwash them in the Nazi youth. And, I mean, Mao did the same thing, right? He ordered the children to turn against their parents and report their parents for thought crimes so they'd, you know, be dragged out of their houses and tortured. You know, we're not there yet, obviously, and we've got a long way to go. But that is ultimately the objective, is to indoctrinate the children, destroy the family unit. You know, the Marxists have understood for a long time, you know, the cultural Marxists, they recognize that in the Western world because of the strength of the family, because of the strength of the church, because of the people's attachment to their nations and their patriotism, there was not going to be any kind of, you know, uprising of the workers. The proletariat were not going to rebel and enslave themselves. And so they recognized that they needed Antonio Gramsci, the Italian communist, from his prison cell, explained that what we really need to do is a long march through the cultural institutions. And that is what they've done. Education, obviously, being the premier one, and you know, that's been my passion for a long time now, is rescuing our children from indoctrination and making sure they get a real education. But, you know, breaking down the family unit, breaking down the church, breaking down civil society, and having all power and control centralized in the hands of government and the mega corporations, that's where they're going with this. And you're right, the breakdown of the family is at the top of the agenda, because if people don't have a family to rely on, then they become much more susceptible to manipulation, they become dependent, and then suddenly there's no barrier between the individual and the total state. And that's what we're seeing. You know, we've seen that in country after country, and now we're starting to see the emergence of that in what used to be called Christendom, you know, the Western world, Western civilization, whatever you want to call it. That's coming. And if we're going to turn this around, those are things that we have to focus on.
I agree. Mark, your thoughts?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. He nailed so many points there. It's encouraging because I do see that too. I see that people are starting to wake up and understand, even especially younger generation. Just going through this election process, I've seen a lot of younger folks, predominantly young males, because they're the ones that are really getting the short end of the stick, and they see it in their face all the time. But that's good, because they're part of the process of waking up, and our youth want, you know, it's interesting when you talk to young folks and you actually tell them the truth, and you tell them that, you know, the CO2 narrative is a lie, and this is why it's a lie. Their eyes light up and they're like, wow, there's somebody that's actually telling me the truth, and something different than they're hearing in the media, than they're hearing at school, than they're hearing everywhere else. And it's like an awakening for them. You actually see it on their face. And so it's really important. You know, again, it is an attack on family, because if you can weaken the family unit and make and force people to be dependent on government, and just like what Alex says, then that's what you've achieved. I mean, it's the Fabian communists, right? It's this incremental, it's this drip, drip, drip that they've been wildly successful at, because exactly as Alex pointed out, is they identified that they weren't going to be able to destroy Western civilization through violent rebellion. So they did it incrementally. And now we're seeing exactly how their plan has come into place, right from the top of the UN, right down to, you know, your local organizer. So and the thing with this agenda is it even if there's a federal government like Trump, they've managed to establish this agenda through state governments, through provincial governments, through municipalities, through Agenda 21. And so you can remove the globalists at the federal level, but you still have a lot of work to do, you know, in the regional and local levels. And so they've done a masterful job, and you have to give them credit for the agenda that they've managed to put forward to this point. But I think there's going to come a time, as Alex mentioned, where people will wake up to it and they'll understand that, wait a minute, we need to stop this. We need to protect, even, and it crosses political lines. It becomes less about left versus right and more about Canada versus this globalist socialist agenda. And I know a lot of folks in Canada that, you know, we're sort of known as somewhat socialist, and we put there, you know, there's this parts of our country that are. And so even those folks, they don't want their socialism or their idea of socialism determined by a foreign, unelected global body, right? And so that's where I think you have a lot of room to unite a lot of people against this agenda.
Well, we see the roots of the United Nations deeply in Canada already, Mark. It's going to take a mass movement right now to stop what's going on, because we see them getting in everywhere. I know that Trudeau is going to sign us on to the mass education program next year, United Nations. He signed us on to mass immigration. Yep. We see our borders opening up, and we have a lot of people coming into Canada that have no intention of ever assimilating to our culture. And as far as I'm concerned, don't have good intentions. And we see that every day in the news. And I'm not a racist person. I got to call what I see and see what I call. And what I see going on in our country right now is Canadians are dying, and there'll never be anybody held to account for it. And it's all part of agenda. We see it going on in Europe. I know that Boris Johnson's going to make some changes in England. I've seen a couple of things that he's come up and said in the last couple of days that I have to applaud. We are seeing a movement towards conservatism around the planet, but it's got to accelerate, in my opinion. My thoughts?
Go ahead, Al.
I'm sorry. I actually missed part of what you said, Barry. It's still a little bit hard to hear you, but you were talking about the mass migration, huh?
Yeah, that's one of the agendas that the Trudeau government has signed us on to, and I know next year, I believe it's in April, that Canada will be signing on to the Mass Education Pact put forward by the United Nations. You want to speak on that? Are you aware of that?
I'm not familiar with that particular education pact. The UNESCO, the UN's education agency, has been involved in education for over 60 years now. In fact, we see that all over the United States, too. Trump did get us out of UNESCO, and he also got us out of the mass migration pact that was negotiated last year. But these things are still coming in through the state level, through the local level, and even through the federal level, despite us being out of them. So, I think with Trudeau, it's kind of hopeless. It seems like this guy would stab his country in the back with pleasure at any opportunity. But I'm hoping the Canadians will wake up to that. But, the mass migration is obviously a significant part of this. They recognize that they can accelerate their political goals by opening up the borders, by diluting the existing culture, by bringing in all kinds of different languages and cultures and religions that, really don't mix well. And it, of course, it's part of the agenda. In fact, they've been telling us it's part of the agenda for a long time. Peter Sutherland, who ironically was the head of Goldman Sachs before becoming the UN migration czar, actually explained it very clearly on the UN's website. He said, we have to get over this idea that we get to hide behind borders. We have to get over this shibboleth, he calls it, of national sovereignty, and recognize that we're just all one human family. And so, he didn't go on to, the next logical stepping point, which would be, well, if we're just all one giant human family, then why don't we just have one giant, one world government, which, of course, is where this is leading to. And if you read what he said, that's what he was calling for, getting rid of borders, getting rid of sovereignty. And, I think they realize that regional government is a faster way to achieve that. But all of this is inseparable from the education issue, right? They have now been indoctrinating European children for several generations now on the need to surrender sovereignty to the European Union. Right now they're indoctrinating African children on the need to surrender their sovereignty to the so-called African Union. They're doing it in Latin America as well with the Union of South American States. And they've told us 1,000 times that the goal is eventually to get rid of the nation state as a, sovereign entity. And we may be able to keep kind of the outer trappings of it, but at some point it kind of becomes pointless, right? You have, in countries all over the world now, the natives are now outnumbered by foreigners. This is true in Frankfurt, this is true in Malmo, it's true in London, right? Brits are now outnumbered in their own capital city. They are now a minority in their own capital city. And so how long until people wake up and say, hey, why do we even bother having this thing called a nation state? We really don't share anything in common with each other. We don't have the same language. We don't have the same culture. We have totally different religions. We have totally different histories. Why bother keeping the trappings of this thing called a nation state? Let's just go ahead and jump into a regional government. We'll let the European Union make our decisions for us. And then, of course, the next step after that is to have it done at the global level. And, this all flies in the face of what God has told us in the Bible. God told us in the Bible that he is the one who divided the world up into nations. And he did it for a reason. In fact, he got really mad when everybody came together and tried to form, the one world government and build their little tower. God got really mad and came down here and separated everybody and gave them all different languages and said, go, now spread out all over the world like I told you to do before. And, that was his vision. And so, of course, we would see enemies of God and enemies of humanity and enemies of freedom trying to reverse that process and bring us all under centralized control. So, it's very, very clear what their agenda is. And I think people will keep waking up to this. The question is, will they wake up in time? Because at some point, it really does become irreversible. And, at that point, I guess hold on for the ride, huh?
We see that now, especially with the push towards a cashless society, Alex. I mean, if they get this to a point where we are cashless, then we really are in a lot of trouble, because you will not be able to do anything during the course of your day that the government's not going to know about. We see a big push worldwide for the chip coming. We see that India now is, I believe, about 93% cashless. Sweden is talking about being completely fascist by the end of next year. And we see lots of other European states starting to fall into this agenda. It's all playing into a one-world government. And I see that coming, and I see it being ramped up very quickly myself. Mark, what do you
think? Oh, absolutely.
At the end of the day, I mean, there all of these things, all of these agenda items, and population replacement, they like to call it. And, I mean, if they really wanted to, you know, encourage enough of a population to support, you know, the younger generation, then wouldn't they encourage a stronger family unit, a stronger economy where people could actually have larger families and continue supporting and creating a tax base and all that? But that's not what they want, right? It goes against their agenda. So, of course, they want us to have less children, and they want to replace our population with this hodgepodge. You know, they call it diversity. Diversity is our strength, is Trudeau's tagline here in Canada. And it's exactly the opposite. The outcome is the opposite of what they're promoting, right? The irony is that more diversity is only part of the goal to make everybody the same, equally poor and equally controllable, right? And so, I mean, all of these agenda items, whether it's through education or all these policies, I mean, they're all for one end game, and that is global governance. You have the UNIPA, which is the Parliamentary Assembly campaign that they're trying to establish. So similar to the EU, similar to these other regional governing bodies, global governance, right? So they already have the global governance now through pressure, through influence at the UN, and who has that influence at the UN. So they already have this form of global governance, but they just want to formalize it through this UNPA, this Parliamentary Assembly. And it's not fake news. It's not conspiracy. They're promoting it. And most of these things, they're telling us, as Alex mentioned, all of these things, you could just go to the UN website and they're all there, right? And so it's just a matter of getting the word out. And again, that's for me, that's my focus, is any way that I can get a platform to get this information out. Yeah, I'm going to utilize it, and hopefully many others do as well.
Yeah, and urgency is kind of the order of the day. And I see a lot of people now, like I said, Mark, starting to get involved, which I couldn't say a year and a half ago. So I think Canadians are starting to realize that, and Americans and the rest of the world are really starting to realize the danger that we're in and what the future is going to look like if we allow this to continue. So we do have a monumental task in front of us. This seems to be a huge, huge, huge movement around the world that almost seems like it's unstoppable. But I wouldn't go that far to say that. I believe that if the human race was really subjected to the information that we're sharing today, and they took some time to really look into it, that you'd see the rise in the population that we need to stop this. But unfortunately, I'm not seeing us there yet. But to say that's not going to come in the near future, I hope it does.
Yes, absolutely, and so you know, as Alex
your thoughts? Mentioned, we're down to about 10 minutes here, so I'll get you throwing some more thoughts and maybe a little bit real quickly on what's going on in this impeachment scandal down in the States. I want you to talk on that just for a minute or so, and then I'll give Mark a couple minutes to speak, and that'll be the hour up, guys. Alex.
Yeah, well, thank you. And, you know, the impeachment thing is a giant fraud, but it goes in, I think, with everything else that we've been talking about. I've got some differences of opinion with Trump. I'm unhappy would be really an understatement when talking about this USMCA, to give an example. But the reality is he's kind of like a big, fat roadblock to so many of these agendas. And it was so obvious at the COP25, he was like public enemy number one, because he called the whole thing a hoax. And he said, we're not going to give you guys any more money to do this. And, you know, go pound sand. And that is totally unacceptable as far as these globalist establishment is concerned. And so that's why they're trying so hard to get rid of him. And, of course, distract people from things that they really need to be thinking about, demoralize the president, demoralize the supporters. I think that really is the agenda. But you talked also about some of the other elements of where this is going, like the cashless society. I don't think you can really understand this all without understanding the cashless society element. Actually, even I think like 6 or 7 years ago, I was invited on the CBC, your friendly government broadcaster, to talk about this. I was reporting from Sweden about how close they were on this cashless society. And you know, at the time, the Canadian government and the Canadian Central Bank were promoting something like this. I think they called it a mint chip or something. It sounded like a delicious ice cream flavor. But that is the direction this is going. And you have all of these big foundations, you know, the Rockefeller Foundation, the U.S. government, the Canadian government, the U.N., openly promoting this idea that we should move toward a cashless society. And what happens then? Well, every single transaction becomes tracked. There's a record of it, allowing whoever has this data to make a total profile of your life. And, of course, there's the element of control as well. If everything is cashless, you now are dependent on the system to be able to even, you know, work for a living, to be able to buy necessities that you need. And there's a really interesting verse in the book of Revelation in the Bible that talks about once we get to this global system, you won't be able to buy or sell without taking the mark. And you know, when that was written 2,000 years ago, it just must have sounded so absolutely ludicrous. I mean, they didn't even know where the end of the world was, right? I mean, the idea that someday a government would be able to control what everybody buys and sells and be able to prevent them from buying and selling must have sounded so asinine. And yet today we now see that reality coming into view. So we need to fight on all these fronts. But ultimately, I think we need to recognize that they all come back to a common source, and that is evil. That is Satan. You know, the enemies of God and humanity and freedom. And you really can't understand the battle without realizing that all these things are interconnected. It's not just that humanity suddenly woke up and everybody had all these terrible ideas and the government all got on board and started pushing them all at the same time. They're all connected. They all go back to the same source. That, you know, the UN is kind of the tip of the spear for this, but it's only one part of the problem. But all of these things are interrelated. They're all leading us in the same direction. And everybody who's listening to this broadcast, everybody who talks to somebody listening to this broadcast has a role to play in resisting this evil and doing what's right. And so I hope, you know, people will learn about these things. I think that's, you know, step one is educating ourselves. Step two is educating others. But everybody's got a role to play, and that begins with learning about what's going on, understanding how this all works together, and realizing that if we don't get involved, there's going to be very, very serious consequences, not even just for our children and our grandchildren, but also in our lifetimes. You know, this is getting serious. We're getting down to the wire. These people are behaving like absolute totalitarians already, and that's with the restraints that they still have imposed on them. You know, just wait till we keep moving down this direction if you want to see a real horror show. So now is the time to get involved, be praying for your country, be, you know, educating your community, and yeah, now's the time to get started if you haven't started yet. So.
Yeah, the window, I believe, is going to close very shortly. Mark, your thoughts?
Yeah, Alex, of course, nailed it again. But, you know, at the end of the day, as far, you know, from a Canadian perspective, I think we really have to get away from this whole sense of left, right, conservative or liberal. People have to understand, and this goes to specifically conservative supporters, you have to get out of the frame of mind that the conservatives are any different than the liberals when it comes to globalism, when it comes to this agenda, because they're not. They are committed 100% to this agenda, and this agenda is going to destroy what we all cherish. And so if we don't wake up to that realization or that understanding and keep playing this whack-a-mole on a merry-go-round of establishment parties, we're in for a world of hurt. So we need to get out of that. We need to start looking out and understanding what's best for our country, coming together, uniting region by region, because all of our regions have these different issues and have these, you know, different problems that are consequences of globalism and of the agenda. And so we tend to be a little insular in our own regions and our own provinces, right? And so we need to understand that, yes, your issue is important to you, but it's also related to the issue that people in Quebec are having and the people in BC are having and across this enormously big country. But we have to understand that there's a head of a snake to this. And we have to, you know, if we can focus on the head of the snake and understand how our problems are associated to it, then we'll be ahead of the game. But and Alex is right, people across the country have to come together. We have to unite against this because we have, you know, we'll have the power in numbers. We still have that opportunity. We're not going to have it for much longer if we keep going the way we're going. So, yeah. So, again, Barry, I appreciate what you do. And I greatly appreciate what Alex is doing. I don't know how aware he is about how much his material comes across the border, but I know that lots of people listen to Alex Newman and follow his stuff on YouTube and the New American and John Birch Society. I think it's just phenomenal stuff. And we're actually, Alex, just so you know, we're actually trying to create a think tank here in Canada called Forum for Canadian Sovereignty. And we're sort of going to be modeling after some of the things that you do, the Heartland Institute, and a number of other ones in America that have come to rise. We need the same things here in Canada. So I appreciate that. You're a mentor to me. Thanks very much for all you do.
Hey, thank you so much, Sean. I appreciate that, and keep me posted if I can help in any way. Thank you guys very much. Appreciate Barry having us on and all that you guys do, and God bless you guys.
Well, Alex, it's been an honor to have you on today, sir, and I hope that we can do this again sometime in the future. And thanks, Mark, for coming in. I really enjoyed this conversation. We could go for a couple hours, but we don't have that time. So I'll say goodbye for now, gentlemen, but hang around, folks. I got the Duracell Bunny coming up the next hour, and I call Roger Landry. Hang around. Always a lively conversation. Thanks again, Alex and Mark. Back in about 3 or 4 minutes. Welcome back to second hour, folks, and thanks again to Alex Newman and Mark Friesen for coming in that first hour. We'll hopefully get Alex back here in the very near future. Incredibly intelligent gentleman. I am joined in the second hour by my good friend Roger Landry, who I commonly refer to as the Duracell Bunny. I hope I can get in a couple minutes of chat during this next hour, but no promises. Roger, welcome to the show, bud, and you know what we're going to talk about today, and I know what we're going to talk about, so let's get into this craziness going on down in the United States. Welcome to the show, bud.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and I'm not sure whether or not that's an impeachable offense, but we can discuss it. Oh, you think I'm kidding? This guy pulled out in front of me today. He didn't even put a blinker on. I said, peach that guy. No, give me a break. This girl comes walking down the street. She's got her dog with her. That dog's not on a leash. That's a rule around here. She should be impeached.
Yeah, it is. I've been watching it here for the last week, Roger. And love Trump or hate Trump, this is a joke what's going on in the United States right now. And that would be an understatement.
Yeah, love Trump or hate Trump, we're well past that point. Where we are right now is so far into down a seditious path. It's insane. This has been likened to a political coup so many times by so many people who actually know what they're talking about, but yet the mainstream media won't use that word. What you have today is an impeachment process that for over 240 years, the people who were elected to take care of and protect we the people had enough respect in the separation of these branches of the government. They had massive respect for each other. And in that, even in impeachment, there were rules, there was fairness, there was everything was done in order to ensure the American population that what was happening was a drastic situation. They agreed, but at the same time, this involved high crimes and misdemeanors, which were in fact impeachable offenses. And in all cases of impeachment, that's exactly right. Okay? But that's not what we have today. What we have today is a situation whereby a political party, an entity, okay, has decided that we made a mistake when we put Trump in office and they know better and they're going to make some changes for us. Okay, let's totally forget the fact that this is a constitutional republic or is supposed to be a constitutional republic whereby they are our elected representatives. It's not them who decide who the president's going to be. It's not them who step in and erroneously, and that's a fact, okay, throw out 2 terms for impeachment that are absolutely unqualified when it comes to high crimes and misdemeanors in any fashion and in no way provable at all, and you're going to impeach the head of what is supposedly the leading country on the planet. Okay. I got to explain something to everybody out there, and I don't think it's going to take a whole lot of thinking. All right? That ain't right. Does everybody know what, and most of your listeners, a lot of them are Canadian, obviously. If you take an American flag and you flip it upside down so the stars and stripes are on the bottom, I mean, the stars are on the bottom. What you have when you fly that is what's called a distress flag. That's flown over a fort that's under attack or under siege. That's flown from a ship that's under attack. This is the flag of distress. I made a meme today, and on that distress flag, I put the following words. When you feel you have the right to remove a duly elected president because you don't like him. There are no high crimes. There are no misdemeanors. This is 100%, okay, political. The bad thing about that is the precedent that is being set right now, this is where the damage comes in. The precedent being set is phenomenal. This is a meme I made up yesterday. I'm going to read directly from it. You have done more to damage the very fabric of this fragile country than any recognized traitor in American history. Any remaining integrity left in our political system has just been snuffed out by crooked and partisan actions. If you go forward unscathed, may God have mercy on America. And underneath those words are all of our lead players, including the Schiffs, the Nadlers, the Pelosis, so on and so forth. What we have happening right in front of us today is a coup. There is nothing illegal in anything Trump did. So what they are establishing as a norm, if this is allowed, is that any time the majority in Congress decides they're a little butt hurt with the president, they can impeach him. End of story. Because high crimes and misdemeanors have just been thrown off the platter. They don't exist anymore. This will set a precedent for the president. Ooh, I like the way that ended up. But anyway, it will set a precedent. What it will do is literally destroy the respect between the House and the Senate. You also heard that it was stated that unless those impeachment, those two, okay, the two terms of impeachment were handed over to the Senate, that the impeachment actually hadn't happened. But Turley, who was a constitutional scholar, actually stated that that's not quite true. Okay, the impeachment had happened, but, okay, this is what most people will draw an analogy here. And if you won't, I'll tell you about it. And it's not exactly right when you're speaking constitutional law, but this is the way most people will think. If Nancy Pelosi holds on to those two terms of impeachment, okay, if she holds on to them and doesn't pass them on to the Senate, there can be no trial. It is the equivalent of a prosecutor saying, you're guilty, I'm going to charge you with umpty scratch, but then I'm never going to send it to trial, which means for the rest of your life, you are under the cloud of being guilty or being accused of by that prosecutor, indicted for a crime you may never have committed because you're never going to have the chance to prove that you didn't do it. There's going to be no due process. So the longer Pelosi holds on to that, which is also against the Constitution, the fact that she's withholding it, but the longer she holds on to it, this is the dilemma we get into. If it goes past the new year, okay, or it goes past the election and they lose the House, will there ever have been an impeachment? I don't know, if the Senate never gets it. Right now, anybody who doesn't believe this is 100% political move has to understand there is absolutely no reason for Pelosi not to be turning that over. She has absolutely no constitutional right to make any demands on the Senate at all. What would she have done if McConnell had walked in to her office and said, this is eventually going to end up in the Senate, and I'm the boss over there, so this is what I want you to do. What do you think Nancy Pelosi would have done? She would have had him escorted from the building and chucked out the door. So what do you think is going to happen now when the shoe gets on the other foot?
Well, my understanding is, Roger, if it doesn't go to the Senate, that he would be acquitted of the charge. Is that correct?
No, the charge never would have occurred. What I'm trying to say here is a district attorney or a whatever, okay, a prosecutor can say, I'm accusing you of, okay? I'm indicting you for. But if it never goes in front of a judge, it's never been proven. All there is an accusation there, because the trial is the Senate. The only thing the House can do is tell the Senate there's enough here for you to hold a trial. That's all they are constitutionally allowed to do. And they did that. They said, we're turning it over to you. It's basically an indictment. There's enough here for a trial. That's where their power ends. End of story. They have no leverage, no ability to demand anything from the Senate. End of story.
So where do you think this is going to go in the next couple of weeks, Roger?
Well, I'm telling you right now that what we are seeing is absolute sedition. These people are actually changing constitutional norm right in front of our eyes, and nobody's holding them accountable. Nobody. This is, like, so far beyond anything you and I have ever talked about, Barry. Everybody looks at it, and because Nancy Pelosi with her, I don't know, I think she's always on some kind of pills, but that horrible look on her face, and she tells you that this is for the good of the country. And the fact is, what the Democrats are doing right now is literally destroying the fabric of this constitutional republic. They are literally destroying it right before our eyes. And when anybody says, well, how can they destroy it? This will probably never happen again. We work on a government that works on, okay, what's been set? A precedent. As soon as you set a precedent for impeachment with the bar this low, can you imagine what's going to happen? And I'm going to predict this in 2024, okay? The law of averages says we're going to have a Democratic president in 2024. But it also says that these people are going to continue to hound Trump all the way through the next 4 years, which means they're not going to have the House. They're not going to have the Senate. But they're going to have the presidency. What do you think is going to happen to the next Democratic president who just happens to get elected, no matter how good that him or her is, when the if the Republicans don't step up and impeach for any reason, and now that the precedent has been set, they can do that. If they don't like this person, or if their base says, do you remember 4 years ago when they tromped all over us conservatives, us Republicans? It's our turn. If the base looks at these Republicans in 2024 and says, you better get off your ass and do this, then they will. So what we are looking at right now is, as far as I'm concerned, unless these people are chastised and held accountable, we are looking at literally the destruction of the U.S. political republic. There's no doubt about it. There's none.
And of course, to say that this isn't all pre-planned and orchestrated to do exactly what it's doing right now, Roger, I think you'd have to have your head in the sand.
Well, there's two factors.
They know the effect that this is. Well, they know the effect that this is going to have.
Yep.
In America, they see the divisiveness. America, I've never seen America so divided.
You and I have had this discussion, okay, several times, whereby you asked me if I thought there was going to be violence in America, and I told you that that was a good possibility if the following requirements were met, right? And we discussed this several times.
Yes, we did.
What are those requirements, okay? The absolute throwing out the door of any responsibility to abide by the Constitution. This is what we're seeing. There is nothing constitutional about what's being done. We had Mr. Turley, who is one of the biggest constitutional scholars on the planet, okay? And this guy sat there and told the Democrats that what they were doing was extremely dangerous to the future of this country for the exact same reasons I'm telling you. And no, I hadn't heard him when I had already talked to you about this, but the facts are the facts. What we're sitting on right now is a powder keg. If these Dems are not chastised and held accountable for a soft coup, and I wouldn't even call it a soft coup, but most people are, against a sitting president, launching an impeachment with no high crimes or misdemeanors, establishing a baseline for impeachment that is so low that every single president going forward stands the chance of being impeached if the opposing party has the House of Representatives. They don't need the Senate. okay? They don't actually have to get him out of office. They just want him impeached. They want 6 months, a year of bad trial, all the little muck they can rake up and throw against this guy or this woman, so then when it comes time for re-election, they can't possibly win. Barry, can I ask you a question?
You can ask me a question. I hope I can answer.
If all of this is true, right? If all of this is true, can you tell me what moron would ever, unless his name is Jesus Christ and he's pure as the driven snow, would ever run for president in this country again?
Yeah, it definitely has lowered the bar, Roger, and the points you made were very valid points. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, an incoming president, if he throws a cigarette butt, if he's a cigarette smoker, throws it on the ground, he's going to be impeached? Is that where we're going?
Yep. That's exactly where we're going. And for anybody out there who says that's ridiculous, then why for 240 years there were presidents in the White House that the opposing party absolutely didn't like at all? Oh, my God. Some of them were they attempted to kill. But what they never did was corrupt the intent of the founders when it came to impeachment. They stated that it was among the most serious issues that could ever be taken up by we the people. There is nothing that should be taken above it when it is a station of, I don't know, what's going to happen if we do this? And what are we doing? What are we doing? They can't even tell. I dare anybody, I dare you, okay, to go out and show me a sound bite where any one of these Dems are asked, can you explain what laws the president broke? And they don't. They tap dance so far away from the answer, it's insane. When you say, okay, for the two terms for impeachment, one of them is abuse of power. Okay, abuse of power. How do you define abuse of power when the president on the call turns in the transcript? The president of Ukraine says there was absolutely nothing wrong, and the transcript proves it, but yet you're going to reinterpret what the president said, and you're going to impeach him for it. Which means that any president, this is how bad this gets, any president going forward is going to be afraid to do America's business because anything he says may get him impeached. So now we're curtailing what the president can say. We're curtailing what the president can do. And we're curtailing the good people who may have one or two little things in their past that they'd like to keep hidden, like we all do, okay, who will never, ever serve we the people because of what's happening here. Anybody who believes that this is just some Democrats who got a little crazy, you're absolutely wrong. You are looking at a freaking wrecking ball making its way through Washington, D.C., and it's not done. Not even close. It's not done.
Well, we got a big problem on our hands, Roger, and I see it. I understand what you're talking about. And, you know, I mean, I'm up here in Canada and people say, Barry, why do you care about what's going on down in the United States? Well, as you go, we go. And we are tied at the hip. And what I see going on down there, buddy, it absolutely astounds me that this is even allowed to go on. How does this kind of thing happen? I'm baffled. I really am. How does this kind of stuff even allowed to go on when there is absolutely no proof? How can one party have that kind of power to bring articles of impeachment on absolutely no evidence? If there was any kind of evidence involved in this, I'd be looking at this a different way. But I'm not. I don't see anything at all. Nothing.
No. So what they need to do is they need to leverage these two articles of impeachment not going to the Senate so that they can blackmail the Senate into doing specific things that they wish to see done. The only thing here is that totally obliterates the separation of the branches. They are independent for a reason. And when you have one branch of the government, whether it's the legislative branch, whether it's the judicial branch, the administrative, it doesn't freaking matter which one. that steps up and says, if you don't do what I want, I will have you impeached, or I will have you removed from office, or I will destroy you. What you have done at that point, if anybody cannot see it, okay, is actually defined as sedition or treason. Because basically what you've done is told one branch of the government, you now control it. And that is not constitutional. As a matter of fact, that is the antithesis of what our founders wanted. So, again, we are seeing something that is absolutely ground-shaking. But the American public has been so programmed with ignorance that most of them, although they don't want to see Trump, and the polls are saying this, they don't want to see Trump impeached. They don't believe he's done what, you know, anything near what should require an impeachment. This is the American people, and the Democrats are absolutely flying in their face. Now, you've got 30 Democratic congressmen, 30 of them, that are in districts that Trump won, okay? They all voted to impeach him, except two. And our lady from Hawaii voted present, which meant right. She abstained as well. Right. So if you stop to consider all of this, again, we're looking at something that is it's being sold to us as something that has to be done and we're taking care of it, don't worry. When in fact what it is we have basically we've participated in a coup against a sitting president and we've thrown the Constitution out the window and this is the way it's going to be.
One step away from total fascist society, Roger.
I really do think that they're on the cusp of collapsing. I honestly do believe, and this is where Trump's strength comes in. And again, I am not a huge Trump fan. There are things that I can see that are positives, and there are definitely some things he's done. But he's one of the few presidents who's actually done most of what he said he was going to do in his first 4 years, when most of them had eight and couldn't do a tenth of what they said they were going to do. But we're looking at, again, the demonization of somebody we put into office. We put them into office. Has anybody asked us if we want to impeach? They did. And you know what we said? No. What kind of effect do you think that had on the Democrats, Barry?
Well, they're still crying because Hillary didn't get in, Roger. Can you imagine the United States today if Hillary had become president of the United States of America? Where would we be today? Where would we be?
The United States at that point would have become the headquarters for the one world government.
Absolutely.
The United States would not be the republic that we knew 4 years ago.
Yeah, so love him or leave him. Like I said, I'm not a big Trump fan either, Roger, but I like a lot of things he's done. A lot of things he's done I don't like. But when you balance it all out, I see him doing more positives than negatives. I mean, if he hadn't been in power for the last 4 years, I can't even envision where we'd be right now. Scary thoughts. And it's really, the worst of two evils, if that's what you want to call it. But the man has done and kept a lot of his promises to the American people. But I'm still standing on the fence. I will continue to stand on the fence. Because I always believe there's something going on behind the scenes that we
there is. Look, you and I have had that discussion too. Nobody ever gets elected to president of the United States unless they belong to what we call the elite caste. Right now, what we're seeing is a civil war in this elitist caste. You've got those who back Trump, and anybody who thinks there aren't those who back Trump, you're wrong. And you've got those who don't back Trump. And Trump's group is basically a little bit more towards the nationalism, a little bit more towards let's keep our societies as they are, a little bit more towards global economies, and a lot less towards a centralized global government. Because a centralized global government is going to have to be, in order to exist, either extremely socialist or communist. There's no other way for a global government to work. So, again, what are we looking at here? We're looking at somebody who won a popular vote, and we're looking at a Democratic Party, and now everybody's saying, okay, they really believe that this guy needs to be impeached because he's a danger to the country. No. I can show you, or all you have to do is go online and type in, you know, people who said we've got to get rid of Trump because we can't win in 2020. Now, a lot more of you, probably a light bulb's coming on, okay? You're probably starting to understand exactly why the Democrats are getting this stupid. They know for a fact. Green has said it. Pelosi has said it. I'm pretty sure Maxine Waters has said it. And I could go on and on. And what have they said? We need to get rid of Trump as soon as possible because we can't win in 2020.
Kind of like spell it out like Maxine Waters. Ah, he's going to win.
But everybody out there that's saying this isn't a coup, let me ask you, how do you define a coup? Would you define a coup as getting rid of a government, a duly elected government, in an illegal fashion against the will of the people? Would you call that a coup if we were talking about, I don't know, Bolivia? Would you call that a coup if we were talking about Buenos Aires? Would you call that a coup if we were talking about Mexico? Why the hell are you calling it a coup when it's happening right in front of your face? That's exactly what it is. By definition, that's what it is.
It wasn't on CNN, Roger. Come on. What are you talking about, buddy? CNN would have reported this.
I want to know.
ABC and NBC, I haven't heard a word of that, man. I watch them every day. And they're all over this stuff. What are you saying, buddy?
I'm asking Steve about peg to meters.
I watch Maxine Waters talk, and I watch Pelosi talk, Roger. And I ask myself, how do these people get into places of power? Because I look at Nancy Pelosi's face, buddy, and I look into her eyes, and I can't describe what I see. It's evil.
I can. It's called narcotics.
It's called something really wrong in that, that girl's mind.
I don't know, whatever passes for mind-altering, let's keep her in line drugs.
Yeah. Today. What do you think is happening in Virginia right now? Roger, where is that going to go in the next little while? Pretty serious drum beating going on down there.
We've touched on this multiple times, okay? These are dangerous times in America. Something like what's going on there could explode across this country a lot easier than people think. What most people don't understand, and you and I have discussed, and probably your listeners would understand because they've heard me say it multiple times, is that if there is an actual shoot 'em up, bang bang civil war in this country, it's very short, and it's going to be very one-sided. Okay. Because your average liberal, if they put together a group of people to come and attack you, and I mean literally attack you, there's going to be probably 100 people with about, I don't know, 10 or 15 pistols. You go to a conservative camp, you make them the same offer. They're going to show up with a militia, with multiple weapons, body armor. They're going to be fully trained. They're going to have camouflage. Are you catching my drift? And all of them are going to be packing both two pistols and a freaking a rifle that will deliver a hell of a lot of rounds very quickly. This is the difference, all right? I'm expecting to see spark-ups like you're talking about, and not for the same reasons, but happening in at least a couple more states before the election. And I'm also going to tell you that some of these will be false flag.
Absolutely. False flags work very, very efficiently, Roger. You know that, and I know that. But Virginia, like you said, this just isn't about Virginia, folks. If you get American citizens getting into an armed confrontation with government entities inside that state, you don't think the guys in the next state are going to say, hey, these are Americans over there being shot.
Exactly what's going to happen.
Exactly. And I knew where you were coming and where you were going with your statement there, Roger, because this If it becomes a shooting war, it will explode across the United States of America.
And
what's the agenda to that?
What most people don't understand is the only recourse that Trump will have. He will have no choice but declare martial law.
Exactly.
Because until martial law is declared, okay, U.S. troops cannot operate on U.S. soil. They cannot operate. They can train. They can live. They can things like that, okay? But they cannot go against the American public. End of story. They just can't. But once martial law is declared, that's a different story. Now, if martial law is declared and they go up against these militias, what we are going to see is a bloodbath in this country that the world hasn't seen in a very, very long time. It will make the revolution in Russia look like piss.
And while this potential revolt is going on, Roger, America would be at its most vulnerable point that it's been in its history. So what an ideal time for something else to happen.
Well, I would tell you that if that actually happens and it spreads across the country, it will literally put the United States not only under martial law, but don't let everybody get too shocked when I say this because it's an absolute fact, also under UN law, okay? At that point, we cease being a nation. At that point, the cowboys of the world have been tamed. At that point, moving forward to a global governance is a hell of a lot easier. In 12 or 13, it was stated in the Council of Foreign Relations that a global governance could not exist until America was brought to her knees because she was the world's cowboy. Let me ask you a question. Has anybody in recent history seen a more ripe situation for that scenario than what we're looking at right now?
Exactly, Roger. Exactly. It's something I think about a lot. You know, they get you on your knees, and then they could hit you with a couple more elements that would absolutely turn America upside down. And it'd be so easy for them to do it because we know they control the money. We know they control a lot of things that could directly impact Americans. You know, catastrophic.
And you know the one thing they didn't count on?
And then we got 5G, and then we got all these other things that they might have little things put away. We talked about this so many times, Roger. You know, I honestly believe when the time comes, they're going to hit us with a few things that we have no idea how to defend against. I've said that many times, and I'll maintain that thought.
Most people think that, again, the 5G is just going to be this absolutely phenomenal thing. And you and I have discussed, and actually, we're winning the battle across the planet. More and more cities and counties and states and countries are deciding that 5G is not for them. But the biggest push behind 5G was not anybody who thought it was these big, media companies and stuff like that. No, it's the military. Again, the military's ability to use the 5G network goes far beyond what these companies can do with it. You and I had a discussion, Barry, whereby I told you that there would be enough elements around. They're talking about over a trillion, listen to the number again, over a trillion small antennas for the 5G network. From that network, you can do massive things. You can transfer military data instantaneously across the planet, massive amounts of it, okay, which gives you the ability now to do things that were only done over extended periods of time before. They can be done almost instantly now, okay? We've talked about phased arrays. We've talked about steerable beams and all of the aluminum in everybody's brain. We've talked about the ability with over a trillion elements to make a beam and be able to steer it to an exact point. Well, how do they know you're there? I mean, gee, so you've got a lot of aluminum in your brain and they can fry you. How do they know you're there? Because every freaking smartphone on this planet is a tag on you. And how much time do you spend without your phone on your body? physically. How much? Stop and think about it. So you're not only a target because of the massive amounts of aluminum in every human being's brain on the planet today. You're not only in jeopardy from a phased array focusing a beam of 5G microwave energy on your head and heating that aluminum up, and that will shut your brain down. End of story. This is not a joke. Who benefits the most by having 5G? Beyond a shadow of a doubt, it is the military. Beyond a shadow of a doubt, it's the military. Because it literally gives them the power over life and death for a vast majority of the population.
Say, Roger. Barry.
Yeah.
Yes.
Can I add something there?
Oh, absolutely.
Two things.
The cost of big dollars, Steve.
Two things, actually. I've always thought from day one that the military has been in control for a long, long time. And number two, Barry, have you ever heard of the human resonance, what the human being is a frequency?
Yeah.
I've heard of that. I've talked to Larry Woods, and I've had that discussion with a few people about that. Yeah.
Well, I don't believe it's any mistake that the Apple iPhones and the Apple products resonate at the exact same frequency of a human being.
I wasn't even going to bring that up, but I'll leave it to you to say that, Steve. That's absolutely phenomenal, and it fits so perfectly right here, right now. And you have said that you've always been suspicious of the military. The military runs things. You're close to being right. And remember, I worked for the military-industrial complex for 30 years. They do not. The military doesn't run anything. The elites own the military. And the military runs everything. There are trillions upon trillions of dollars that go missing on a regular basis, and they're not even accountable for it. As a matter of fact, if you remember, there was, the Attorney General, or who was it, the Secretary of State, who made an announcement the day before 9/11 that there was $2.3 trillion they couldn't find that was missing from the Pentagon. The defense spending. So what happened? The next day, a plane hits one of the towers, the Twin Towers, and then Building 7, then the other Twin Tower, and totally destroys all records on that $2.3 trillion. Gone.
Yeah, wasn't the office that was hitting the Pentagon, Roger, the office that was partially responsible for the accounting of that $2.3 trillion?
It was totally responsible for it.
What's that?
Yeah.
So it was totally responsible for it.
But at the same time, what other people aren't saying is that a lot of the files, a lot of the responsibility for the contractors that this money went to, those files were in Building 7.
Mm. And also, Roger... And Barry, the investigation of Enron Corporation was in that building.
Yep. And again, we could go on and on. To this day, nothing has been done to satisfy the demands of we the people for a true investigation for 9/11. As a matter of fact, we've got so many people, first responders, that have died and are dying from what was emitted, after the fact. When they were there doing the cleanup, and they're basically just being thrown away, literally. What we're seeing is a culmination of a generation of tyranny. That all started with a huge kick. Right about the time Kennedy got a couple of taps in his head, right? And then it kind of had to force itself back away from the surface a little while. And you had people like Carter, who was pretty much a servant. And you had people like Reagan. And, of course, you had people like Nixon, who was just nothing but an idiot. So we've had the good and we've had the bad. But we are in a situation, again, where these people who wish to see a global governance. These people who wish to have the elitist caste and all the rest of us, those they allow to live, okay? This is all being predicated to happen now because of the technology. It took almost 200 years to get to where we were in the late 1950s. And since the early 1960s, when technology started to accelerate, remember, I worked for the military-industrial complex. What the government had and what we had was years ahead of what the public had. And the only time we got rid of that and the public got it is when we got something better. So what we had that wasn't, you know, really good enough for us anymore was suddenly the wonder stuff that the public was getting. If you stop to consider the situation right now, okay, they're fearing the technology. They're fearing the Liberty Beacon talking to our website in right outside of Paris, our website right inside of London, our website in Australia. They're fearing our, not what we're going to say, but the fact that we can say it. Because they already know what we're going to say.
Crazy.
Because they've told it.
Media today is the biggest scourge that the elites have. Now, it's also their biggest ally at the same time. Because you've got the mainstream media in the United States, and even they are having to make some admissions lately. But as a rule, they are parroting every single lie made by these people. And then when all of a sudden someone steps up and says, well, that's a big fat lie, which happens all the time, it doesn't get any press coverage. So what do the people sitting at home believe? The programmed ignorance in America is astounding. What do they believe? They believe what the guy on the screen told them because they were told, this is the best news. We always tell you the truth. And if don't watch us, you're not going to know what's happening in the world.
Barry, can I add something else?
Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I just posted something maybe 20 minutes ago. There are quite a few reports out from alternative sources all over the world. Researchers, yep. Researchers, scientists, and reporters that don't go along with the climate change agenda.
Agreed.
They are not allowed into the climate change conferences to ask little young Greta Thunberg any bad questions or whatever you want to, however you want to characterize that.
No. I not only agree, but what you are – okay, again, what you're looking at with climate change is a twofold attack. And the thing I like the best about this show is that you guys constantly tax me because I constantly tell everybody I'm an expert at nothing, but there's nothing that I can't discuss intelligently. Okay, what do we think about Greta? Let me tell you something about Greta, okay? She serves a purpose. I have no problems with Greta whatsoever. She's a kid, and they have actually programmed her to do this. She may think she's doing it willingly, and that's okay. It's all good, but I can't blame a kid for this. What I can blame is the intent behind it, okay? What we have with climate change is a twofold situation. One, it is a way, again, to tie more countries together under one level of governance. All right, everybody has to adhere to these green rules. Carbon emissions for in this country, you've got to buy carbon emission credits or whatever, the whole nine yards. Okay, so what we're doing is we're making this into a huge financial issue. The ability to make money for the right people, Al Gore, the ability to make money hand over fist is absolutely just astounding. And the ability to harness more countries closer together in that global governance you're looking for is also aided. So this is what you're seeing with the global warming issue. We all know for a fact that the Earth is going through a cooling process, which is why they don't call it global warming anymore. Now they call it climate change. So we've gone from global warming to climate change, and pretty soon you're going to start seeing it, and then it's going to expand. We're responsible for the Earth cooling, right, we're responsible for the Earth cooling. And there'll be a huge push on for to warm the globe back up. Because over the next 100 years, we're moving into a mini ice age. 100 to 150 years, yeah.
Yeah, I've read that, Roger. And I've been reading about that. And, you know, of course, that will never be exposed because it doesn't go along with the climate warming agenda and the attack on carbon. We talked about this in the first hour. How did carbon all of a sudden become the enemy when it's the substantial building block of life on the planet?
Carbon isn't even, you know,
it's not a greenhouse gas.
It's not a greenhouse gas.
No, it's not. Not at all.
But yet, for 5 years, that's what they sold it to the world for. It was the carbon emissions. It was the carbon emissions. My God. Yeah.
And crap breathing, guys. And cows, you can't fart anymore.
That's it.
My God, it's just terrible stuff. But we're actually at a very low level for carbon, for parts per million in our atmosphere. We are actually 200 parts per million away from a point where life stops growing on the planet.
They'll now.
Brilliant.
Go ahead.
I've done a lot of looking into this. I've been studying it a lot, and I've gone to 5 or 6 different websites to see the actual concentrations of carbon in our atmosphere, so I can get a pretty general idea that they're all kind of on the same page, and it's very verifiable information. And at 400 parts per million, we are basically about 220 parts per million away from a point where plants will stop growing. Why are we attacking carbon? I don't understand. Somebody explain to me, Roger.
I do understand. Again, it's a mechanism for control, and again, it's a mechanism for money.
I know. I'm just playing the part of a dumb Canadian.
And it slides in with everything else, because let's talk about geoengineering. I mean, if we're going to talk about carbon, if we're going to talk about climate change, okay, or global warming, let's actually talk about real climate change, because anybody who thinks it's not going on, you're an idiot. It is going on. It's called geoengineering, and vast swaths of the entire globe are sprayed every single day with something. Did you say you wanted to breed that? I didn't say I wanted to breed that. And a vast majority of that stuff, because they say it's to reflect the sunlight, okay, and cool the planet, which we've already determined the planet doesn't need to be cooled. So they're spraying, and you've all heard me say this, metric tons of nano-sized particles of aluminum up into the atmosphere, and we all breathe them because anything in a gravity well has to settle. So we've got all of this aluminum, this barium, these other chemicals that are put up there to react with the clouds, to make the clouds grow, to make water droplets form quicker and clouds to grow faster. All of this stuff is being done. So anybody who says there is no climate change is an idiot. Because if you look up above in the morning when you wake up and there are 20 lines going north to south and 20 lines going east to west, and you've got a hell of a checkerboard sitting on top of you, and if you wake up with the feeling in your head, gee, isn't it nice? 6 jumbo jets didn't have anything better to do than play tic-tac-toe over my house last night. If that's what you think, you're a moron. You're breathing too much of what's falling out of the sky. All right? So climate change is real. It has been weaponized. The military has had climate change in its arsenal for at least, I don't know, since the 1950s in some fashion or another. So when they say climate change, they're talking about us smoking too many cigarettes and too many cows farting, destroying the planet. True climate change are these elitists doing things to us that shouldn't be done.
Yeah, and what kind of technology do they actually possess, Roger, when you
say they can stop it from raining here. They can stop it from raining where I am and make it rain 200 miles further north if that's what they want. They can turn the northeast in fall into an absolute blizzard that is like a 1-in-a-million-year shot. These crazy storms you're seeing that have never happened before, there is a reason for them, just like the reason why Paradise, California got burnt to the ground.
Yeah, what about New South Wales now in Australia, Roger?
Yep.
I mean, I've been looking at what's going on down there, and I mentioned at the start of the show today, this is unprecedented what they're experiencing.
Yep.
You know, all the extreme fire emergencies, and when they issue extreme emergencies, I was actually talking to a lady called Lily May yesterday in Australia.
Yep.
And she says, you know what, Barry, what's actually being shown on TV really doesn't hit on what's actually going on down here right now.
Of course not.
They're in situations right now where six of the fires today are being classified as catastrophic, and they've never had that happen before. And they're also experiencing some of the hottest temperatures they've ever experienced in Australia. And they're only getting in the start of their fire season, Roger. So, boy, I'll tell you, I wouldn't want to live down there right now, buddy. They really are going through hell. My heart goes out to them, but go ahead.
I would tell you that everything we're looking at today. Look, you've all heard me say this, and I'm going to say it again. Please don't think ill of me, because there's a reason why I say this. If I was going to be born at any point in time, from the beginning of time to now, this is when I would want to be born, because I got to tell you something, there isn't a damn thing boring about this at all. And for anybody who doesn't understand just how involved I am when I say something like that, Barry will verify what I'm about to say. For at least 10 years, I've gotten up before 6 o'clock every morning and gone to bed after midnight every single day. For the last 10 years plus, without one single day off, and all 18 hours I work on this project. Because I am so involved, so drawn into, so amazed at what the hell is happening. Do I like it? No. Do I think it's good? Most of it, no. Some of it, yes. Is it catastrophic for humanity? Yes. Could I have found a more boring time to be born? A hell of a lot more. But, Barry, if I can even make a dent in keeping what we all know can happen, if nobody tries to make a dent, then I will have lived a very successful life, and the last 10 years will have been the best 10 years of my life.
Well, you're in it for the same reason that most people are, Roger, that we see what's coming, and we're going to do everything we can while we still have a breath in our lungs to stop what's coming. And education is the tool, and program ignorance is a very, very good expression. You use it a lot, but it's so prevalent in our society now.
That is the actual mission statement of the Liberty Beacon Project. If you ask most big projects what their mission statement is, you get a small book. You ask the Liberty Beacon, they will tell you, our entire mission statement is the eradication of programmed ignorance. That's it. Three words. And if you need more than that, you don't understand what those three words mean.
Well, we are definitely in exciting, dangerous, and incredible times. Because you put 18 hours a day, Roger, but you know what? I'll bet you don't find too much boring to look at in that 18-hour period in a day. I spend 3-4 hours every day looking at stuff on the Internet, and it absolutely overwhelms me with some of the things that are going on. I can't look into all of it because I would absolutely go crazy. So I applaud you for what you're doing. Some people can do that. Some people can't. I find I get on here for about 4 hours, 5 hours, and I'm burnt out. Or I'm emotionally distraught to the point where I don't want to watch anymore.
As far as me going crazy, that's a trip I made a long time ago, and I don't think I have a passage back. So, if that's the barometer that people use for me, is he crazy or not? Let's walk into this discussion with you already knowing, yes, I am. But how do you define crazy? Because to me, I'm crazy because everybody says to do what you do every day for 10 years without a day off, you got to be crazy. So guess what, Barry?
Well, we're all crazy in our own. We're all crazy in our own ways, Roger.
Yes, I mean,
some of us do crazy stuff. Some of us spend crazy amounts of time doing stuff. But we're all crazy. If you're not crazy, you will go insane.
How many times have you and I had a discussion where I've had to tell you, "I'm sorry, Barry, but I don't know anything about that"?
Don't think too many times, actually, Roger. I mean, let me think about that. No, I can't. Okay, next question. I think anybody that's involved right now in trying to get information out, Roger, could say the same thing, because when we start looking into this, we realize that everything we're looking at is tied together.
It's all one giant puzzle. It's a spider web, and we are the flies.
Yeah, but after a while, you start to see it. You know?
Yes. Yeah! Yeah, that's a fact, Jack.
Okay, listen, Roger, we're down to the last couple minutes. That hour went really quick. It always does when I get you on. Plug your sites and stuff again for a minute, and I'll have to close the show for the week.
Well, I've got to tell you how much I enjoy this, Barry. You know I do. Yours is one of the very few shows that I make time to do because I like the fact that you allow me to say just about anything I want, and you only want about 3 minutes out of your out of your hour. Okay, this is yeah, and Steve's in the background laughing. I know he is. This is the Liberty Beacon Project. The main website is thelibertybeacon.com. Please put the in front of it. And just go to the top and you'll see a banner. And there's our other four flagship websites, and you have access to all of them. One's in Paris, one's in London. I mean, they're across the planet. But we spend every single day trying to make sure that everybody knows the other side of the story. And thank you for the time, Barry.
Hey, Roger, thanks, man. And folks know now why I call you the Duracell Bunny. So we're going to get a T-shirt made up and send it down to you, bud. Hey, thanks for coming in, Roger. And you know I'm going to be calling in a couple, 3 weeks to get you back in again because I really enjoy our conversations. And thanks for taking time out of your busy day to join me, bud.
You're my friend, Barry, and this is what friends do.
Thanks. Okay, folks, well, that's it for this week. Thanks again, Stephen, for producing my show. Thanks for tuning in today. Thanks to Alex Newman and Mark Friesen for joining me the first hour. And I've enjoyed this conversation immensely today. We've touched on a lot of different subjects. Hopefully we've shed some light and opened up a few cells in your brain to get you thinking about what we're talking about. You all have a great week, and I'll be back next week, same time, same place. God bless you all, and have a great week. Bye for now.